Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here today to continue the expectations series for the 2024 Baltimore Ravens. Today, we're going to talk about Brent Urban and Roger Rosengarten, two players who each of whom should have a significant role for the Ravens. And joining me to do that is Frazier Tafar. Frazier, how you doing?
Doing good, Ken. Glad here to be talking about two of the most interesting Ravens, especially Rosengarten being our third round pick and a very needed starter on offensive line.
Yeah, and they despite all the defections and whatnot, they got only one new offensive line draft pick. They did sign Josh Jones, of course, but not a big bevy of incoming talent. And yet you still have the feeling that some of the talent's been around for a while now. Daniel Faalele, even Patrick McCary, their jobs may be in jeopardy in terms of the Ravens moving on from them for various reasons. McCary, not for his play, but for the dollars. And Faalele, more question of how well he's played so far in 2 years. But let's start the I won't say the lesser of these two players, but we'll start on the defensive side with Brent Urban, who will be entering his 11th season. He actually was drafted in 2014, didn't play his first game until 2015. A lot of people remember that game. That was a game he actually blocked what would have been the game-winning field goal, or what might have been the game-winning field goal, and it was returned by Will Hill for the kick six that beat Cleveland in that 2015 season.
Yep, that was a very memorable game. Pretty much our whole roster was injured that year, but that was one that would be remembered because it was very special for us that year. But Brent Urban has been a contributor for the Ravens when he got drafted and also when he re-signed. He's been consistent, a leader, and continuing to show why we bring him around all these years.
Yeah, the defensive line, I guess we have to start there. Very weird situation because they had five guys who played every snap the entire season last year. And in training camp last year, the only one who was signed for 2024 was Travis Jones. But since then, we had Michael Pierce extended. We had Brandon Williams extended. Michael Pierce extended during the season. Brandon Williams extended last year in camp.
Broderick Washington.
Broderick Washington. Yeah, that's bad. That's a bad miss. But it's not the first time I've made that mistake, I guarantee you. And Travis Jones, obviously, is the centerpiece of the Ravens' offensive line at this point in terms of what he'll do in the future. But Brent Urban, a very valuable, fungible piece on the outside. I say fungible because his roster spot, he's part of the handshake crew, probably will be for the rest of his career, where the Ravens will cut him towards the end of camp to get one extra injured player onto the roster that they can later activate via the IR-DTR rules.
Yep, and I think that's exactly the role he's going to be playing this year, is continuing to be the handshake guy wherever we need cap manipulation. He's there for us, and he wants to be here, and that's the main thing. Some players that have that opportunity don't take it up because they don't want to be at these places, but Urban is someone that has enjoyed his time here, and his relationship with Michael Pierce is definitely a plus. They've had some funny bits on sound FX, just going back and forth. And it's good to see that kind of camaraderie in the room.
It sure is. It's great to see. It's great to see players, you know, enjoying each other's company like that. They clearly are friends there. He's still a five tech entering his 11th season. In a way, he's been an endangered species for quite some period of time because in a lot of ways, the base defense goes away. So he really has to be a versatile 3-5 guy. Plays a lot in base package. He can play some uncovered end, and he did this last year for the Ravens when they had only one outside linebacker on the field. He ends up being an edge defender. But really, he's a five tech in the base defense for a lot of his snaps. Played 24.6% of the snaps in 2023. He plays almost exclusively on early downs. The Ravens have three guys they really like to rush the passer on obvious passing downs. So Urban is primarily a rundown guy.
Yep. Watching some of his film for prep of this podcast, I think, I don't know if it's just me or it seems like he's off the ball farther than all the other defensive linemen.
Yeah.
I think that's something that, I don't know if that's his game or I wish he would get closer, because when he does make contact with the linemen, he's standing them up. He's not getting pushed back. And that's the frustrating part about him being off the ball so far.
Now, I want to have Brent on the show again to explain exactly that. But I think if I had to guess, and I'd be explaining it for him, and I don't like doing this, I think it's a way that as a very tall man, he can get his hands up and get leverage on that lineman. So to be able to maintain his low pad level, he probably has to be offset by a little bit. I'm trying to think of whether Calais Campbell, if I really remember him being off ball a little bit as well, because he'd be a similar kind of player in terms of length and height and whatnot.
That would make perfect sense then. I didn't really think about it like that, but yeah. Sometimes it just seems kind of outrageous. I'm like, wow, he's very off the ball.
Yeah, when he's talked about it, when he was on the show previously, he did talk about needing to get two hands on the defender and getting leverage that way. He wasn't really a one hand longer than two guy. He can go to one hand, but you need to start with two hands was the point he was making. He's saying Travis Jones is really the guy he's seen do the immediately go to one hand to overpower a player. But it's not something that's really in his repertoire. Talking about five techs just going away, though, not a lot of teams still playing 12 personnel, which is the real big opportunity for a five tech to play. It's got to kind of be on early downs. You got to be playing 12 or 21, but you know, probably more teams are in love with 12 personnel now and trying to do it that way than actually use a fullback. But it's a nice opportunity for him to get on the field when that happens. He played only 10.9% of his snaps on third and fourth down this last year, whereas the Ravens overall had 26.8% of their defensive snaps be on third and fourth down. So it just gives you an idea. He's really playing disproportionately very few snaps on obvious passing downs there. The Ravens did use 2.20 defensive linemen per play, just down very slightly. From the 2023 Ravens used 2.20, down very slightly from 2.22 the year before, which is the highest in many years. Both years, the Ravens really went away from using a rush nickel package where they use an extra outside linebacker on the field. So they relied very heavily, is the point being, on the guys they had. They all had to average 44% of the snaps to get to 2.20 defensive linemen per play.
Yeah, and back to your point about him being a run-exclusive D lineman, I think that helped him be able to specialize in that role and give Matabika the flexibility to be the two-down lineman he is, be Travis Jones, same thing, just be the pass rusher he could be, and continue to play the role and be pivotal and just helping the whole group.
Yeah, it's certainly where he excels. I think it's where it really takes a lot of pride in his game. And he had a couple of nice cleanup sacks of Clowney this last year. But I think he really takes pride in his run defense, denies space exceptionally well in the run game, good pad level, good leverage that we talked about a little bit earlier, uses his long arms very well in both important ways, both in being able to maintain that low leverage and out leverages anybody if he can stay low at that kind of length. And the other way is to get his hands up in the air.
Yes.
And bat some passes down. Only had a couple this last season, but he's had some big ones in his Ravens career.
Yes, and he's always going to get in the lane. Even though he doesn't make the play, he's going to make the QB anticipate that he has to make a certain type of throw because he knows it's not going to be a clean lane when he has him in front. And also, he's continuing to be the leader, telling the guys, hands up, because he's the main one that's going to have the opportunity.
Yeah, that's a really good point, is that you want good leaders in that way. And even some of the guys who are not as big, and you start with Michael Pierce, get their hands up pretty well on this defense. Brandon Williams again. Broderick Washington had 6 PDs at the line of scrimmage 2 years ago. Didn't have as good a year this last year. But that's something hopefully that will return to his game as well. And we'll see more knockdowns at the line there.
Yeah, I'm looking for Broderick to kind of transition into that urban role, continue to be that Swiss Army knife in the sense of being versatile in the run game and also being able to rush the passer as well, bring some pressure up front.
Legitimate 3-5 guy also, no problem playing defensive end for Washington. And he should be a guy that I think will be around. I'm trying to remember what his contract looks like, whether or not the Ravens really have a chance to move on from him after this year. My recollection is they do, but it's not a real big savings, so they might not. Let me just look at it really quick here. and just see where he is. So they can't cut him this year. They would actually have a $3.7 million negative. Yeah, in 2025, they only saved $900,000. The guy they replace him with is probably going to cost more than that. Yeah. So I don't think that I think he'll be with the Ravens in 2025. 2026, I'd say, as of right now, it's almost certain that he would not be. There's a $4.0 million savings from cutting him that year that I think the Ravens would be likely to harvest. So as far as Urban goes, you know, it's a year-to-year deal for him. He's not a young man anymore, you know, this being his 11th season. But how long do you think he'll still play, Frazier?
I think he probably has one more year to two more years. I think if we hopefully get the job done this year and take it all the way, he's done for sure. And I'm 1-2 for sure, 1-2.
You know, maybe he's the kind of guy who retires right after Super Bowl. And, and you know, even if he plays 15 snaps in it, that feels like, you know, I've done all I can kind of thing. There are a lot of players who, you know, make that choice at some point in their life. But, you know, Brent Urban is a guy who's never broken the bank in the NFL. And it's something that's kind of unfortunate, but injuries just always seem to pop up at the wrong time for him in terms of the contract. And then he got to be an older player, and he's really been more of a survivor, a guy who's been a fungible roster piece on the fringe, and a guy who's, you know, made a, you know, $1 million to $1.3 million in some of these higher years. He did have one bigger contract where he made a little bit more, but he's never really broken the bank like a lot of the players. So it's actually quite enticing to come back, I would think, for another $1 million, $1.3 million.
Yeah, for sure. I think he's probably reached a point in his life where he has kids and he's ready to move into the next phase, because being a journeyman probably wasn't the best. Because I know he went from Baltimore, Chicago. Did he have one more stop or just straight to back to Baltimore?
Dallas, I think he played, but I'd have to look it up to be sure of that. But I think he did play in Dallas.
Yeah. So, I mean, traveling to three different cities to play sport and not really being a real key part in the plans of the future, I think he's probably ready to continue to enjoy his time in Baltimore. This team is obviously fun, young, and ready to do things in the future, and he's going to try and be a part of that as long as he can.
I think the game against the 49ers, a really big highlight for him. One of the best games of his career. Probably the best defensively he's ever had. He certainly had more Iron Man games early in his career, 2017-ish in particular, where he played a lot more snaps. But the game with the two sacks on national television against the 49ers is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a big time stage for him. I was really happy to see that and shut down the Brock Purdy MVP talk during that time. It was getting kind of annoying. But, yeah, just seeing that kind of performance for him and putting that on display was great to see, because we know him and the kind of work he puts in and the kind of guy he is. Just for everyone else to see that is definitely, definitely amazing.
All right, got two good and one bad things to say the rest of the way. The pass rush did not suffer with him in the game, and that's really kind of unusual, because he was in there on a lot of early downs. You have a higher percentage of the team's sacks will come on later downs, a higher percentage of pass plays result in sacks on later down, because the quarterback will hold the ball later because the risk, you know, the risk of a sack is worth it to try and get the first down. But they still had 8%. Sacks with Urban on the field, despite the fact that Urban himself is not contributing a lot of that pressure directly. Now, he's getting some decent pocket compression. He's getting his arms up and making things difficult for the quarterback, so they may have to continue moving. And he's denying space and maintaining rush lane integrity. Some positive things he's contributing to the pass rush while on the field anyway. It's very nice to see, and actually a little surprising, that the pass rush was basically every bit as effective with him on the field as without him.
And to your point, I think it's mainly to the part of him putting his hands up, getting in the lane and making the quarterback bring the ball back down and think about where he's going to throw next and look at his next read. Cause most of the time he's going to get in that quick lane and he's going to have to go to intermediate or deep. So I think that's probably the main reason why they continue to have a high sack rate with him on the field.
Here's another positive for him. He's played now 6 years with the Ravens and 1,543 total snaps as a Raven. During that entire time, he's only had one penalty, an illegal use of hands that occurred in 2017. Now, one of the things that often is true of defensive linemen is sometimes they pick up holding calls when they're trying to keep a lineman from advancing into level two. I associate that with more with nose tackles, with Casey Campton, if I want to put a name directly on it, was a guy who was guilty of holding 30 times a year, and it probably was called 3 times a year on him. but Urban would be a guy I would have thought might have gotten himself into situations where he'd get personal foul flags for whatever reason. Roughing the passer is the big one. Obviously, people are going to say that, well, he's not dropping the quarterback too often, so he's not taking a lot of roughing the passer risk. But I think there's other times where you know, just things can happen unexpectedly in the backfield that you end up being part of. You know, he's never jumped off sides with the Ravens, which is amazing. It's kind of strange, honestly, but that's a positive. So anyway, I was fond of that. And in a time where we're talking about how often John Simpson was being penalized, basically John Simpson played the same number of snaps as Urban has with the Ravens and had, I think, 17 penalties. It was 17 penalties in 1,622 snaps, if I recall correctly, with the Raiders. And he basically repeated that with the Ravens again. So yeah, it's a big difference to have those penalties. It's actually a very nice thing that doesn't typically show up in the stats that you see about a player.
Yeah. And I think that's credit to his technique and his continuing to have the great detail to the game and be a student of the game. I think he's someone that benefited from his hockey background, continuing to have that functional strength and being able to take those hits and not get pushed back. I don't ever think I've seen Urban on the ground unless he's been like tripped over or something. I've never seen him get overpowered, I don't think. So for him to not have a penalty and hold his own and not be forced to hold so the linemen don't climb to the second level, I think that's great.
The one thing that wasn't as good in this last year was his missed tackle rate has not been as good in recent years. And specifically the last 3 years combined, he's missed 11 tackles by PFF standards. And they can be kind of tough, but I'm just looking for a standard that is standardized, and they have that. And if you compare him to other linemen, his missed tackle rate is not very good, at 19.6% in the last 3 years combined. So if I had an area of improvement that I'd still like to see, that I think is probably reasonable at his age. I mean, there's a lot of things he can't improve on. He can't get faster. He's probably not going to be a better pass rusher than he is right now. But if he had to miss fewer tackles and there was something he needed to focus on or do a little differently, I think that is a potential area for improvement.
Might be when he locks out and gets leverage, he's potentially standing straight up and the running backs or whoever the ball carrier is obviously coming in with leverage. That could be possibly what's leading to the missed tackles, and he probably just has to continue to stay low and stick to his technique.
It also could be a natural consequence of being a good space denier. If I'm going to make another possible thing, is that when you do that and then your goal is to keep one arm free to try and get to the ball carrier, you're going to be a lot less effective tackling with one arm than with two. So you end up with more of that. But anyway, lots of good possibilities there. Why don't we jump in? What's a good season for Brent Urban from your perspective?
Good season is continuing to be the handshake guy, being a key rotational person in terms of heavy reliance in the run game and situational pass rusher, having him in to give guys breathers when needed, and continue to bring Broderick Washington under his wing.
All right. All right, very good. Broderick certainly got the most similar role. I'll just read mine because it's got a lot of the similar stuff. Continue with a 3-5 role, play snaps as needed. And there's going to be times when he's needed more as a 3 because somebody's hurt. There's going to be times when his role is only as a 5. But anyway, at play as needed, cut for a roster spot, then re-sign. Handshake crew, I think, is definitely in his job description the remainder of his career, and continues to effectively manage space against opposing running backs. That's the biggest thing. It's just he helps other people make plays, and he makes fewer himself because of it. And that's his job. I think he does it quite well. And I'm not sure it really shows up in ratings about him either, but he's a very good run defender. How about a great season?
great season. I was on the fence of either being a guaranteed spot, not being a handshake guy would be a great season, and also contributing more in the pass game, getting sacks, pass defense. I would say a target sack number would be around 5 to 7 sacks would be a great season, and 3 pass defense, and continuing to shore up on his tackling.
All right. I pick an 80th percentile level. So I don't think there's a 1 in 5 chance that he'd have, say, 5 sacks in this coming season. But here's how I define a great season. His role increases due to circumstance to 25 to 35% of the snaps instead of the 24.6 he was at this year. A combination of increased pressures and batted passes is a contribution to the passing game, but I'm not going to be specific about what I expect in there. I just want to see a little bit more in terms of pocket compression and a couple more batted passes than he had this last year. And no specific sack total for sure. Continues to create plays for other tackling, improves on a small scale. And, you know, I think if you're really talking a great year, there is one thing that would be a hallmark of it, is that he makes himself a fairly obvious candidate to return in 25 and gives the Ravens the option to either move on from Brandon Williams or not. It's essentially a zero deal to move Brandon Williams. Did it again, Broderick Washington. If they're going to move on from Broderick Washington, then they can do it. And Brent Urban is a reasonable alternative to do it. That would be a great season were that to occur. And honestly, I think I'm probably realistic for Brent and for the Ravens as well. The next time he's hurt is probably the end of his career. If it's a season-ending injury, almost certainly. Even if it's an injury which puts him on the shelf and really puts his return in question during that season, it probably means at the end of the year they move on and find somebody else. They didn't draft a defensive lineman. Really kind of remarkable in this year's. It kind of puts them in a position where I don't think his roster spot is in tremendous jeopardy based on the other guys they have. So he should. I don't see a risk that he doesn't really make this team.
Yeah, I think he has a secure spot. But back to your point, if he does get injured, it is going to be tough for him to come back from that. I think he's took a lot of wear and tear, and one more injury could set him over the top career wise.
Right. All right. Well, let's move on and talk about Roger Rosengarten. Obviously, polarizing selection for the Ravens. I think I judging from draft night, judging from the talk beforehand, and probably just projecting my own feelings onto a lot of other people, I really felt like this was the year the Ravens needed to solve the left tackle problem in some way, because they had a special advantage in being a year away from needing the replacement for sure. And there's no way that Ronnie Stanley is coming back to the Baltimore Ravens after the 2024 season, at least no way that I think is reasonable. If he has a good year, I think somebody offers him more money. If he has another year of injuries, I don't think anybody offers him money. Nope. I think that's where we're at right now, but it's going to be too high or too low in terms of what he does. So Roger Rosengarten, for better or for worse, is a guy that the Ravens may look to at left tackle starting in 25, or they may, you know, just give him a trial at right tackle and try and find their left tackle next year.
Yeah. In terms of this year, I think I don't know if I've ever been excited to see preseason as much as I am this year, because I really want to see how he is in live action against twos and threes and just see how he holds his own, especially in the run game. I know they really drafted him based on athleticism, being a leader, taking the blind side of a left-handed quarterback, all those intangibles. I think they've really just – the Ravens are trying to cater to Todd Monken's offense in terms of having tackles that can get out in space and do screens, jailbreak screens, tunnel screens. I think that's the direction we want to go to, because those plays added on top of our run game can cause a lot of confusion with the defense, because they're going to be consistently on their front foot, anticipating the run, anticipating a quick throw, and then sooner or later, Zay Flowers, Bateman, likely Andrews, it doesn't matter. Someone's going to go over top on them.
Yeah, it's you know, I'm with you in those terms. I think the marginal game, I think, first of all, I think you can run those plays without having a particularly athletic right tackle. And so if you went to Morgan Moses again, and the Ravens, for whatever reason, moved on from Morgan Moses, they had their reasons for doing it. I'll say this. They had to know something about the nature of his injury that really scared them about moving on. So, or maybe it was about the timing of Stanley coming, being a year away, and they wanted to make a replacement now in terms of a selections. They didn't want to have an older player in there as the starter when they really wanted to see what they had. And some of the younger guys, whatever the reasons were, they had them. The draft on Rosengarten at number 62 is a pretty significant reach in my book. I think he was a guy that was, you know, 80 to 100 guy, about 82 consensus on most boards. But the left tackle board and the tackle board in general, but the left tackle board was absolutely wiped out, beginning with the selection of Joe Alt at the Chargers at number 5. You know, that's a team that didn't absolutely need a tackle, and they drafted a tackle. And then that created a set of dominoes that was just very difficult to not have everybody's board wiped out.
Yeah, the Ravens were definitely against all odds this year in terms of trying to get exactly what they wanted. The left tackle position was definitely the biggest need next to corner. We got our corner in Nate Wiggins, but still not being able to land even – there was – who was the tackle in the second round before –
Suamataia or Patrick Paul or who's the other guy? I'm trying to think of the second round tackles. I'll have to look it up.
And then also when we missed out on Guyton, when the Cowboys took him, that solidified us kind of just, okay, let's see what's going to happen and just wait for the chips to fall. But did you find it?
I'm looking at, I'm not even sure. Patrick Paul went at 55. Blake Fisher went at 59. And Rosengarten then at 62 and Suamataia at 63. So there weren't any offensive tackles who really went early in the second round. Most of them went in the first round, with Guyton being the last of it. But, you know, Alt was drafted earlier than projected, and that meant Latham moved all the way up to number 7, and Tennessee was not a 100% sure thing probably to take a tackle, but they did. And then Fashanu went to the Jets at number 11, which is about where I would have projected him. In fact, I thought that if the Ravens had traded for number 11, they could get Fashanu. Then we had Fuaga go to New Orleans at 14. We had Fatano go to Pittsburgh at 20. That really sucked, let me tell you. I'm sorry. Marius Mims go to Cincinnati at 18. That might have been a slight reach, but still one that really sucks.
Yeah, for sure.
And then Jordan Morgan, I was actually happy that he was taken at 25, because I don't like him nearly as much. The fact that Packers took him is probably a good indication that he might be an okay player, but I had serious reservations about him at left tackle. Then Graham Barton, who's not really a tackle, he'll move to center in the NFL, went to Tampa. And then Tyler Guyton at 29 finally got drafted by the Cowboys, one in front of the Ravens. So
I feel like Guyton would have been a
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high-potency gummies, top shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them. Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Each at that point, too. He's definitely a year away, but in terms of what we needed right now, that would have been a reach.
So there's no doubt about it. Wiggins was by far the best player on the board for most of that mid-20s run. Okay. Yep. He was by far the best. I'd have to really look back at who I think is a better football player. Who was the last better football player drafted prior to Wiggins? And it'd be pretty far up there because they got a top 15 talent. But the problem is barriers to entry. And it is just incredibly expensive to get in at the tackle position. And it's expensive both in terms of draft capital, but also in terms of time. And I usually talk about draft capital or the possibility of trading for one. I mean, basically, you can't trade for one. If you sign for one, you're going to sign away the franchise to do it because left tackles almost never make it to the market. Yep. And the other possibility is you draft one. If you don't have top of the first round draft picks in a typical year, you don't get one. This year, there happened to be a lot of left tackles, a lot of potential left tackles, and yet none of them lasted till 30. So the Ravens were kind of SOL in that regard. So I think they ended up reaching in the second round, and the reach cost there is less because the difference between 82 and 62, and however you want to measure it, maybe JJ points, is not that bad. But and reaching from say 55 to 30 to get Paul, would have been an enormous reach. I don't think Guyton would have been that sort of a reach. 10 spots, sure, but 20 or 30 spots, no. I'm not buying that. I think they had to have Guyton ahead of Rosengarten. At least I think they would have had to. And maybe maybe now they'll swear up and down that they didn't, but they also were kind of cagey as possible when the Ronnie Stanley and Tunsil draft and the pot mask came up about who they would have really drafted if they were both there. I mean, Harbaugh said he was the number one guy on the board when we drafted him. That's what he's willing to say. But yeah, how about before the video?
You got to read him between the lines with John Harbaugh.
Yeah. I think I'm actually reading it correctly there. So anyway, let's talk about who Rosengarten is as a player here, because obviously he played on the right side at Washington. He very actually similar in some respects to Ronnie Stanley in terms of having extremely good feet. Lateral mobility is not an issue for him, which is one of the really nice things. However, he's got two shortcomings. The first is a very below average anchor, even for the college game, but certainly for the NFL game. If you watch that national championship game, you saw him get pushed around. I mean, when Michigan figured out in that second half they could go to the bull rush against him, they went to the well time after time after time and did not go thirsty.
Yep, for sure. And it was concerning to see because, I mean, that's obviously as Ravens fans, that's the main game we're watching to critique him, and it's disappointing to see how he, even on some of the good plays, he was getting pushed back into the pocket, and that's not what you want to see with Lamar back there. We want to see him have clear space to operate, and if he wants to take off, it's not due to cautionary reasons. It's because he wants to make a play.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, one of the things, the other point of comparison to Ronnie Stanley is that Ronnie has always been a guy who has given ground, even when before the injury in 2019, he was this way, who gave a lot of ground to maintain his interposition between the pass rusher and Lamar, and end up Lamar getting hit or even touched far less often by that pass rusher. But there were plenty of times where Ronnie Stanley is getting pushed back into the cone or maneuvered back into the cone by pass rushers that forced Lamar to take off. He's just exceptionally comfortable with that kind of pressure. And I wonder if there is something in terms of the stylistic similarity between the two that makes the Ravens think that Lamar will be amenable to this sort of backside pressure in future years, beginning in 25.
That's going to be a really skinny pocket. We have two tackles that can't anchor tapping our quarterback on the shoulder each time. I think that could be a problem. I'm just not he does have a lot to work on. And the one thing that stands out to me is his lower half is definitely lacking in size. I think this year in the immediate future, it's going to be a struggle. But next year and years beyond, I think once he starts putting on the grown man weight and gets in the weight room with the trainers and things of that nature, I think he has a technique, like you mentioned, the footwork, being able to put that all together with the strength, power, and the technique and sense of offensive lineman play, it'll be lethal in the future.
You know, I think that is something that's very difficult to do in terms of really gaining the lower body good mass you want. To maintain, you know, obviously he needs to maintain his feet, but he also needs, you know, he needs big, thick glutes and buttocks, frankly, to get bigger. That's just not that easy to do. I mean, people are natural apples or they're natural pears. That's the way we're built as human beings. And some people really carry their weight in their hips, and that's most of the guards in the NFL. And yeah, some people carry their weight in their bellies, and that's me and a lot of other human beings, you know, around the world. And you know, we're stuck with the way we're built. You know, it's a major body reshaping like that. I'm not aware of a single reshaping of that type that I could point to in you know, my years of watching the NFL. There's been guys who, you know, Linderbaum has put on more weight, and he's become a little bit more, he's become much more effective as a pass blocker in so doing. But I think, you know, you're whatever weight you put on, whatever things you do, you start making concessions to other parts of your game to do it effectively. And I body reshaping, he's in some ways he's the right shape to be an offensive tackle. He just doesn't have a good enough anchor right now to do it. So hopefully he figures that out.
Yep. Very good point.
All right, now let's look at the Ravens roster for a little bit in terms of who they've got, because the competition is pretty thick at tackle coming into camp this year. I wonder how you see the roster, you know, shaking out here, but they've obviously got Stanley, and they can't, it'd be too much money to not cut him, to not keep him on the roster at this point. So he's staying. But otherwise, you've got, you know, four other tackles: Jones, Fa'alele, McCary, and Rosengarten. This team potentially could have 10 offensive linemen, five of whom are offensive tackles. Obviously McCary can play other positions, and maybe they ask him to again. Maybe he's moves to strictly being a backup left tackle and a backup center. So you could have things. Jones has played a little bit of left guard. He hasn't really played anywhere effectively in the NFL as yet. Fa'alele played decently in 94 snaps at the end of the year. But he really has not, you know, played well at any point in his career to date either. Do you think they keep all five of those guys?
I think if Jones doesn't perform in camp and preseason, I think he's probably out of there unless they want to keep him around on the practice squad, because tackles are hard to come by. Me personally, I'm pulling for Fa'alele to be the starting right tackle at this point. I think I truly do want to see what he has. He has, in my opinion, the size of the tackle that we need in this offense, not in the sense of getting out in space, but keeping Lamar clean if he continues to work on his footwork and in the run game, just being a bruiser. I want him to take the next step. I know I've talked.
Oh, I think we lost you, Frazier.
I truly am pulling for him this offseason. And McCary, same thing, continuing to be the reliable backup, swing tackle. And then obviously Stanley.
Now, you make a good point on Jones, that the Ravens don't have a lot of sunk costs with him. It's about $600,000 that they gave him in terms of a signing bonus, but they didn't guarantee his salary for the year. So basically, they can walk away from Jones if he completely falls flat and is, you know, back to being an Arizona left tackle who didn't do anything. They could let him go. Falele has two cheap years left. It's, could they let him go? Sure. Will they let him go? Something tells me that with an extra option year on him in 2025, his chance of sticking is higher, whereas Jones and McCary don't have those option years remaining. Let me check. McCary may actually be under contract, but
they're probably saving a lot cutting him next year.
Yeah, they might save a lot by cutting him, so they can't really, they won't, they're not really looking to do it. No, actually, McCary's only under contract through this year. So McCary, you actually have a savings of $4.4 million if you cut him. That money could put to pretty good use if you were confident in the other four guys you had at offensive tackle.
You considering Saleh?
No.
Okay.
I think his chance to make the team is actually flickering. I don't think he's guaranteed in any way. I think they'd almost have to carry 10 offensive linemen to keep Saleh around. Practice squad, sure. He wasn't ready to play football last year, and the preseason he was so awful. He's a guy, you know, you mentioned how important the preseason is this year. This Saleh is one of the players who really needs to get into the preseason. And there's a number of wide receivers and defensive backs who cannot afford to have soft tissue injuries this year. And I made the point on a couple other shows that soft tissue injuries disproportionately go to corners and wide receivers and probably safeties as well, but to a lot of those guys. And JAD has missed five of his six career preseason games, and it's really hurt him. You know, he's not getting playing time. TJ Tampa, they need to know what they have. You know, if he plays three preseason games, plays pretty well, well, then maybe he plays 200 snaps this year on some sort of rotational basis, or he's earlier up in the sequence of players you bring in, or they keep a player out for a week because they think they can afford to have him out, like Humphrey isn't really ready to play. They don't force an activation on him because, hey, we've got TJ Tampa. Let's see what he can do this week. This is a big season for a lot of Ravens younger players in terms of making sure they get on the field and their spot on the totem pole of replacement is understood well going into the year and going into 25 for that matter.
Yeah, the Ravens have a lot of fourth-year cornerbacks that have a lot to prove. You have Ardarius Washington, you have JAD, Pepe. You have Pepe Williams. I feel like I'm missing one more name.
Ardarius Washington, Pepe, JAD. Brandon Stevens is going into his contract year. So there's no question of him being able to get on, there is a question of him being able to get on the field because there is for any player, but there isn't any question of him having a job won at this point.
Exactly. He's solidified as our starting corner, but those three they've shown flashes, especially Ardarius and Pepe, but JAD is the one that has just not gotten a chance. And it seems like John Harbaugh likes him. They want to get him on the field, but it just hasn't panned out. I think all of us know that one game against New England where he got torched by Devontae Parker. And that was the last time we've seen JAD really.
Yeah, that's true. JAD played just a handful of snaps this last year. And he's a guy, it's almost like the golf swing is too complicated for him, just to throw another metaphor in there. I tried to take up golf a couple times in my life. I was never able to master driving. It's just, it's too much for me, all of the mechanical moving parts to drive well. And maybe, you know, hours and hours and hours of work at a driving range, I could have gotten started on it and gotten somewhere, but that wasn't me. I didn't really want to play golf that badly. But what I think may be happening with JAD is he's got so little college experience playing against really talented wide receivers in the SEC and then here in the NFL. Obviously, he's got almost no experience. He really has no preseason experience, which is a huge loss for him, frankly. He never has really learned to do the things necessary, all the complex things that a corner needs to do to stay in phase, to be able to be touching the receiver, to look back for the football, all of those things he needs to do well at the same time. are like a complex golf swing. He's got to put those together. And players like, I think I already see it in Tampa, and I certainly see it in Wiggins, who completely trusts himself to get himself out of any trap, supervillain trap he's put in. His powers are going to get him out of it. But for JD, it's just extremely complex. The guy is fast. You know, he's got that part of his game, and he's tall. He's got that you want in a cornerback. And then he just can't freaking find the football. He can't keep track of the receiver. He's not a big, imposing physical guy that he forces receivers to the sideline. It's all too complicated to put together in terms of the actions he needs to do to stay in phase and find the football at the same time.
I love your use of word in phase, because that's exactly what corners need to do. Stay in the general area of the receiver. So if the ball comes that way, you can make a play. I've never seen him in the area of the receiver when the ball is delivered. And that's where we have the issues with JAD. I think when you see Pepe Williams, he's contesting. I mean, he's jumping up for the ball. He reminds you of Tavon Young a little bit, mm-hmm. That little pit bull and him just continuing to be nasty and scrappy. I think it's going to be tough for those on the bubble guys to stand out, especially with the rookies coming in and even the undrafted coming in.
Right. I'm not ready to give up on JED yet, just because I think he's got the most in terms of natural tools as the other guys. But damn, I hope when I first get there to camp this year, I really hope I see a player who it's obvious he's gotten off-season coaching. Because that's what he needed. He needed positional skills. Doesn't need a bunch of workout. I mean, everybody needs to maintain their speed, stay in shape, do the things they need to do in the offseason. But what he needed was positional coaching. Someone to figure out what's wrong, spend a lot of time just trying to correct that with him. I would have been great. I mean, he's the kind of player who probably would benefit tremendously from individual coaching as opposed to going to a Deion Sanders cornerbacks camp.
Right.
I mean, there are things, I'm sure there's things he can learn from that. But it's almost like that's probably an advanced class and he doesn't have all his prerequisites yet.
Exactly. He needs that one-on-one attention to get all the details that he needs. And I think the even more curious part of that is John Harbaugh was a former DB, and I know he knows a lot about the technique and everything. So for him, JAD not to really pick it up to this point, because dare I say the Ravens do develop corners. I don't think that's a crazy statement to make. And for him not to kind of catch the curve is a little disappointing. Because even though Pepe Williams, Ardarius Washington, the only reason why they haven't had the opportunity is because they've been hurt and haven't been able to get on the field.
There have been very few corners the Ravens have drafted in the top three rounds that they have not gotten value out of it. They got a lot of value out of Dwayne Starks and Chris McAllister. So it's not even a question about players like that. Yep. The one guy that was a little bit of a disappointment was a second round draft pick was Deron Jenkins. And the fact that we have to go all the way back to 1996 to Foxworth. Find the guy who didn't work out. Dominic Foxworth was a free agent acquisition.
Oh, okay.
The guys they drafted in rounds 1, 2, 3 are like Lardarius Webb. I mean, I have to go through the list of all the corners they drafted in the top three rounds, but they've had some misses on the defensive line. They've had some misses at inside linebacker in rounds 2 and 3, at outside linebacker some. But they really have not missed on corners very often. And they may not have drafted all that many. I really have to go back to look at all the number they drafted. They missed big on a safety with Elam.
Yep.
I'm trying to remember the corners that they really missed on since Deron Jenkins. And I'm sure somebody remind me of one there are, and I'm going to look it up myself.
I mean, Amon Marshall, if you want to count that.
Fourth round pick. So I'm talking about the guys they drafted in the first three rounds. Okay. Marshall might have even been a fifth round pick. I might be wrong about that, but he obviously never got on the field due to injuries. If I'm looking at cornerbacks they drafted, and do I have the round here? Marlon Humphrey, first round pick. Nate Wiggins, first round pick. Tavon Young, a fourth round pick. Brandon Stevens, a third round pick. Anthony Averett, a fourth round pick. Amon Marshall, a four. Trey Walker. why are these like, okay, because they got some labeled as DBs here. So anyone else is going to be lower down than that. But then they had Dwayne Starks, Chris McAllister, Jimmy Smith. Deron Jenkins would be the one. Gary Baxter, I think you'd have to say he probably did work out. Wasn't perfect, but I think he did work out. They missed again with Terrence Brooks at safety. Here's one they missed on. David Pittman. He did not work out. Third round pick in 2006. So they've had two guys that really didn't work out. Ladarius Webb, obviously, they won big with. And then, you know, you're down to the fourth round guys, and some of the fourth round guys certainly have not worked out. So hopefully, at this point, it's more important that TJ Tampa as a fourth round pick works out than a JD does. That's the honest truth, because they've got 4 years of him. They've got two of JD. Perfect. Let's go back to Rosengarten, because that's who we're actually talking about here. What's a good season for Roger Rosengarten?
A good season is working his way into the lineup due to unfortunate circumstances. I don't see him as taking the starting role to beginning the season, working on his anchor and showing off his skills in pass pro.
That's good. I've got a lot of, I'll just read mine because this is what I always end up doing when there's a lot of overlap here. Phased into the starting right tackle job at some point during the season, as Orlando Brown did at midseason 2018,
exactly,
in a vet-friendly environment. You know, it's always rookies got to earn it. Harbaugh directs how that depth chart is done. The PR department actually puts it together, but they know what the rules are. Harbaugh wants the rookies at the bottom of it all the time. Rookies got to earn it. So we'll see something like that at camp, where Rosengarten is the third string right tackle behind Falele and McCary or something like that, or Falele and Jones. And it'll look funny to everybody that knows that he's going to get the job at some point this year. He has to show that his feet are at least good enough to play right tackle, and his anchor has to show up better than it did in the national championship game. Now, that's a very low bar. He was terrible in that game. But honestly, it was also his worst game of the season. Then I have to throw in another negative. It wasn't really elite pass rushers that Michigan had.
Yep.
There are a bunch of guys. I mean, Harrell was drafted in the seventh round, but there wasn't anybody who was a really immediately NFL-ready player that he was facing in that game. And, Orlando Brown played against Nick Bosa, for example, in his senior season. So, or whenever, junior or senior, whatever his last year in college was. Continue on. He needs to give us at least some hope that he can move to left tackle if Stanley departs after 2024. I think it's not a good season. It's certainly not a great season if we don't have at least some hope of that entering 25. And it's just important to give the Ravens the best possible OT flexibility. It doesn't have to be a sure thing. It doesn't have to be something that can't be reversed. And it doesn't have to be something where if the better offer comes along in next year's draft, and they think they've got a great developmental left tackle who clicks right away, that they don't draft him anyway. But it does need to be that he gives us some hope that he could move to the left side and be effective.
Yep. I think
for me, a
great season would be he earns the starting role, is able to work his way through in training camp and preseason, earn it over Falele and hold down the spot. Have, like you said, in a situation he swings to left tackle and shows that he's able to at least play that position at that level, because naturally, he's said in interviews, he started out as a left tackle and swing to right because of Penix being a left-handed quarterback. So in the case that Ronnie does go down for hopefully a game or two, he's able to step in and show us something.
Yeah, we hope Ronnie doesn't go down at all, but I know what you mean. You mean hopefully no more than a game or two.
Exactly, yeah.
And that is unfortunately, it's extremely optimistic given Ronnie's recent injury history. So hopefully he's, hopefully he was the guy we saw towards the end of last year, which is a pretty damn good player again, but we won't really know. For me, a great season, very similar. He wins the right tackle role out of camp, and he plays at a level where he never loses it. So one thing about, you know, starting roles typically on the offensive line in the NFL, and particularly with the Ravens, is they are loath to unravel continuity on the offensive line. And that's why a player like Simpson ends up winning the left guard role, never loses it, even though you've got a player like Cleveland available who might have been better.
Yep.
And, they value the continuity and they want to keep that group together. And I think that's what they do, even if Rosengarten has some struggles early on. As long as he doesn't completely fall flat, have a bunch of fall off the cliff games where you just can't keep him out there because he's so bad. I think he keeps that right tackle position once he starts starting there, once he begins his starting there. It does not mean perfection, even in a great season. I'm not expecting perfection
at all.
Very, very few offensive linemen are at a Pro Bowl level in their first year. If he plays at a level where he's a league average player, exactly, that'd be an enormous place to move from. So that would be great. And that would be 120% of the hope I need for him to be able to play left tackle in the future if he shows that. I think I want to see run blocking that's consistent, and that he learns the Ravens dance steps well to run counters effectively. That is an important thing that the Ravens do, so you need to have that. I need to see an anchor that is solid for an NFL right tackle, and he's not a complete fish out of water when matched up against some divisional rivals. You think about some of the pass rushers in this division right now. You've got Za'Darius Smith and T.J. Watt there right now. I'm not even sure who the Bengals would have on that side of the field, because Hendrickson usually plays opposite the left tackle. But you know, there's a lot of talent in the division in terms of pass rushing that he's going to have to deal with, and he's going to have to be not completely out of place in that matchup.
Do you think if both tackles are struggling early in the year, we go back to the rotation?
So with Stanley, I think they always kind of have an excuse for it in terms of health, but mm-hmm. but we'll see. Because if you know, if he says, "Man, I'm completely healthy this year," just not, I'm just playing like crap. If it was that, then I think you'd almost be at a point where you'd be moving on from Stanley. You'd be trying to figure out, who can I pick up at the trade deadline? What's it going to cost me? You know, do the Ravens really have a chance to be a Super Bowl contender if they just had the left tackle they need? And, you know, I think the team needs to be exceptionally honest with themselves, because it's going to cost them a lot of draft capital to find a left tackle they got. They've done it before. They did it with Eugene Monroe. So it can be done, but it's not a prospect you really want to ride with if you have an option.
Fair.
And on the right side, I think, it's possible. I think it could be part of a phase-in role that Rosengarten would play rotationally. I think once he proves he can do it, I think he's in there for good every snap. I don't think you try and rotate with McCary or Fa'alele or anything like that. I think you just roll with it.
Makes sense.
All right. Always a pleasure to talk football with you, Frazier. For folks that don't know, Frazier's my co-host on the matchup show we do during the season. We did one for most of the year, and then we started doing two in the towards the end of the year and in the playoffs, because there was just so much to talk about. But we'll probably continue that this next year. We're on for that, right, Frazier?
Yes, sir.
All right. Looking forward to it. So where else can people talk football with you online, or watch any content you have put together with other people?
You guys can reach me at Twitter/X at F_RAVE8. That's F_RAVE8. DM's open to any kind of conversation you want to have.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, if you'd like to do a short this offseason, I'm open on topic. Just send me a DM. They're always open on Twitter. Had some really good ideas recently. A couple recollections, people. I like your idea of doing Fabian Washington as a player. So if you don't want to do him for some reason, Frazier, let me know. And I'm sure there's somebody else who has Fabian Washington, that love-hate relationship with him that a lot of people seem to have, but it'd be an interesting player to do. There's somebody who picked today to do James Hurst, which is another one of the you know, kind of a love-hate relationship, but certainly a guy who, Ravens fans are, it was very polarizing among Ravens fans. And I love to do those kind of players, as well as the players everybody uniformly thinks are good and maybe had a limited role in the past. But you let me know if you want to do one of those, and I'll reserve that player for you. Frazier, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, sir.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line.
And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them. Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.